listener production. Hi, Sasha Barbagat with you for today's episode of The Briefing. A new flu vaccine has arrived in Australia, and it's not like traditional vaccines. It's cell-based. Cell-based flu vaccines are developed differently from the traditional egg-based ones. They offer advantages in production, scale, and better matching viruses in our vaccines compared to those currently circulating in the community.
A lot of it comes down to whether the individual and the population recognise how serious flu can be for them. That seems to be one of the drivers that gets people vaccinated, if they recognise that disease can be severe and that vaccination's an effective step that they can take to reduce their risk.
The new flu jab and why you should be rolling up your sleeve is our deep dive in the second half of the episode. But first, Bension Siebert is here with the headlines. It is Tuesday, April 9.
Good morning, Sasha. Israel's Prime Minister says a day has been chosen to launch a ground offensive in Gaza's southernmost city of Rafah. Benjamin Netanyahu has not revealed when it will happen. More than a million Palestinians currently sheltering in Rafah after previous military operations were carried out in the north of the Strip, forcing them to flee there. Most people there are living in tents, and access to food and supplies is extremely limited.
This comes as Anthony Albanese appoints a special advisor to review Israel's probe into the airstrike that killed seven aid workers, including Australian Zomi Frankham. Former Air Chief Marshal Mark Binskin will test the findings of the review, including whether the strike was really a case of mistaken identity, as mentioned by Israel. Now, Israel hasn't responded to Australia's request for this special advisor, and it's not clear if Binskin will be granted access to confidential information during the Israeli investigation.
We are confident that that will be made available because it is in Israel's interests as well for there to be transparency around these incidents. They have shaken the world.
That was Anthony Albanese speaking there. And we have heard from the opposition leader, Peter Dutton, who is speaking out against this appointment. He claims it's a measure to appease pro-Palestinian Labor members.
The caucus of the Australian Labor Party is split at the moment. And frankly, the Prime Minister's response to people who are living in fear in Jewish communities in our country at the moment has been deplorable.
The PM's response to that, Bension, was that the higher standards should apply to the IDF. This is according to the Prime Minister, because it is a democratic nation that should subscribe to international law. And while he didn't say it, he was referring to Hamas being declared a terrorist organisation as the opposite.
Donald Trump says abortion laws should be left up to the states.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
Trump's been avoiding addressing his stance on abortion. These remarks coming after months of mixed signals on where he stands on the issue. He's made it through the entire Republican primary, Sasha, without making his views on abortion clear, although evangelical Christians across the US credit him for appointing the Supreme Court justices who overturned the national right to an abortion in 2022. Now, Trump's decision to frame abortion as an issue for individual states and not make it a more hardline stance has drawn opposition from major anti-abortion rights organisations. Trump has previously suggested he could support a 15-week federal ban with exceptions in the case of incest, rape, and when the life of a mother is in danger.
And it looks like he's chosen not to go down this path. And the interesting factor in all of this is it's viewed as a way to not galvanise Democrat voters who might have turned out in bigger numbers if he had come out and said, we want a full ban. Now, abortion is currently banned in most cases in 14 states across America, including Texas, which is the second most populous state in the country. Another seven states have restrictions that prevent abortion between 6 and 18 weeks into a pregnancy.
Yeah, and interestingly and surprisingly, I suppose, the number of abortions carried out in the US actually rose slightly after the Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe versus Wade. Experts say this was driven by the expansion of mail-order abortion pills and also more abortions and more abortion access in states next to states that ban abortion. So you had Republican states banning abortion or going close to banning abortion, and then you had Democratic states significantly increasing access and the ability for doctors to do it. So that was an interesting development. Meanwhile, in, I guess, another example of people in positions of power telling other people what to do with their bodies, the Pope has issued a statement about gender. The Vatican has reiterated its staunch opposition to what it describes as sex changes, which we would now call gender affirmation procedures. Also gender theory, surrogate parenthood, abortion and euthanasia in a text that was dubbed Dignitas Infinita. The document says the sex a person is born with is an irrevocable gift from God, and people who desire, quote, personal self-determination as gender theory prescribes risk conceding to the age-old temptation to make oneself God. Very tempting, isn't it?
A new poll shows a majority of Australians would support more radical housing policies. The Guardian Essentials survey of over 1,100 people found a majority, 57%, back the Coalition's plan to let Aussies access their super to buy a house. A similar amount, 56%, were in support of a public property developer, which has been put forward by the Greens. Just over half of respondents backed calls for changes to negative gearing and capital gains tax concessions. This poll also found 43% think the housing system in Australia is broken, and 9% think it's working fine as it is. It's worth noting that 9%... There was a very similar result when it asked people, what do you think housing is for? So there were responses like, oh, it's a basic human right, or it's a way to build vibrant communities. 9% of people said it's a way to build wealth. And I can't help but think those 9% were the same that said that the system's fine, everything's working as it should be. It's worth noting right now what Labor's policy is. And Labor is trying to get through its shared equity scheme, which would essentially mean that the government would help pay for and therefore partly own people's homes. This policy is not popular with the Coalition or the Greens, and they are dragging their feet on it. So that is yet to get through.
And the US, Canada, and Mexico are being treated to a total eclipse of the sun. The rare event is luring sky gazers, with a whopping 99% of the United States in a position to view at least a partial eclipse, while the total eclipse will see the moon pass between the Earth and the sun, turning day into total darkness for about 4 minutes, and it will be visible in at least 13 states. People jockeying for the best spots have hit traffic queues in some parts, while more than 350 couples have chosen to get married right as the total eclipse hits Arkansas. That's a bit of a weird decision in my view. Going completely dark, let's get married. Okay. Special flights have also been chartered by Delta Airlines for people who follow the path of the eclipse, and millions of people are expected to view the phenomenon overall.
I think people just like getting married when big events happen, you know, something that doesn't hurt anyone. It's like, oh, hey, why not? And, you know, Arkansas, it's not the most, you know, progressive place. They're probably like, oh, well, this is a great... No, that's so rude. I was about to just go in on Southerners. I will stop there. Look, I don't think it's that weird. People like to get married when big things happen. Some people go and get married in those zero gravity planes that take off around the... I'm getting distracted now. But yeah, there's all sorts of weird marriage celebrations that people like to engage in. Why not during a total solar eclipse? And I've been really jealous looking at all of this morning. So I looked up when Australia is going to get its next total solar eclipse. There was actually one in April last year, but it only hit the northernmost part of WA. So the next one is in 2028, which is in about 4 years' time, and the event will cut a path across the country. It'll start in the Kimberley in WA. It'll go right across the Red Centre, and it will go directly over Sydney on the East Coast, which means that probably capital cities nearby, so Brizzy and Adelaide and Melbourne, would probably get a bit of a view, but it looks like Sydney's going to be in prime position for that one. So put it in your diaries, July 22, 2028.
So if you're in Sydney, watch out. You might accidentally find yourself married on July 22, 2028.
Yeah. Bensian, thanks for being here for the headlines. Next up, it's our deep dive into the new flu vaccine. I mentioned at the top of the podcast, a new flu vaccine has arrived in Australia. And it's not like traditional vaccines. It's cell-based. Cell-based flu vaccines do not require chicken eggs, and some studies have shown they're better at triggering the body's immune response to viruses. If you qualify under the National Immunisation Program, you get the jab for free. If you don't qualify, you'll have to pay. We thought we'd take a deeper dive on why the new vaccine is so effective and why cell-based vaccines are preferable over the traditional egg-based jabs, but also why you should roll up your sleeve this winter to get vaccinated. Dr. Julianne Baylis is an immunologist and vaccines medical director at CSL Seqirus, the company behind the new vaccine. Dr. Baylis, thanks for joining us on The Briefing. Tell us how a cell-based vaccine differs to its egg-based counterparts.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and it's a great question. We've been manufacturing flu vaccines for many years and utilising chicken's eggs to do that. So we take the viruses that we're going to use in the vaccines and we culture them in chicken's eggs. FluCellVax differs because rather than using those chicken's eggs, we manufacture the vaccine in cell culture.
Okay. Look, some people often report feeling sick after getting the jab. Is that more or less likely to happen with this new vaccine, or is it pretty much the same?
Yeah, I think one of the really important things to understand is that you can't get the flu from a flu vaccine. None of the flu vaccines that are available in Australia contain the flu virus in its entirety. They contain small pieces of the virus that allow our bodies to develop an immune response to the viruses that are circulating in the community. Sometimes people will feel a little bit of a sore arm or maybe a little bit tired after they're vaccinated. That's not unusual. It's typically, if that does happen, it's very mild and you feel better within 24 to 48 hours after vaccination. All of the vaccines that are available are very well tolerated. The safety is assessed as part of clinical trials, and we continue to look at that after the vaccines are registered as well. And there's no difference in terms of FluCellVax's safety profile and the other flu vaccines that we have available in Australia.
You say influenza vaccination is really important in helping take the load off our healthcare system, especially during winter. Why is that? What role does getting the vax play in that?
So there are lots of important public health steps that people can play to reduce their risk of influenza and to reduce the risk of transmitting influenza in the community. We know that locally, flu cases tend to peak in late winter and early spring, and that flu moves very readily through a mobile community, which is what we have right now. People are out and about, living their lives, they're going to work, going to social events, they're traveling, and all of that allows flu to spread very readily in the community. Things that you can do to reduce your risk of flu, one of the most important and most significant steps you can take is to get vaccinated. You can also make sure that you're following good hand hygiene. If you are unwell, that you're staying home, you're doing your best to keep away from other people that are unwell too. And some individuals may prefer to wear masks as well to further reduce the risk of transmitting respiratory disease or being exposed themselves.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about vaccination fatigue. Now, obviously, during COVID, there was this initial kind of understanding that we needed the vax, and people, I think it was sold to a lot of people as, well, you can have your life back if you get this jab. And I think that did sit pretty wrong with a lot of people. They weren't happy at kind of being coerced. They felt coerced, at least, into kind of getting this vaccination. Look, we know how serious the flu is, and recent research indicates 50% of Australians consider flu to be very serious. But last year, we only saw 25% of the population aged 5 to 64 actually get vaccinated against the flu. Is work happening? And, you know, my guess, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that that would have a lot to do with vaccine fatigue and people feeling like they just aren't interested in rolling up their sleeves so close to the COVID vaccine rollout. Would you agree with that? And also, what work is being done to maybe turn the tide back towards most people feeling in favour of getting a vaccine?
Absolutely. Vaccine fatigue is playing a part in terms of lower uptake than we'd perhaps like to see, particularly for things like flu. We saw a really incredible response from the community in terms of COVID vaccines and what we needed to do to get out and about and living our lives again. And the impact that this has had on not just flu vaccination, but other vaccines as well, is something that's being felt in Australia and overseas. And there's lots of work being done to understand the specific factors at play there. I think fatigue is absolutely one component of it. I think that understanding the ongoing need for vaccination is another component. Remember that we've had regulations in place in Australia around pediatric vaccinations for a very long time now that allow individuals and their families to access government payments to attend childcare and these kinds of things. So mandates around vaccination are not new for us in Australia. Flu certainly has never been mandated. What I will mention is that you quoted 25% in the 5 to 64 cohort, and typically these are the people that would experience relatively minor symptoms with respect to flu. Certainly, they can end up in hospital and they can end up very unwell. And there are years where we see people in that age cohort actually die from the flu. So flu can be serious for them. Where we continue to see higher uptake of our flu vaccines, particularly in our older adults, and coverage in that cohort, in our over 65s who are funded under the National Immunisation Program, typically sits in the range of 70 to 80%. We'd like to see it even higher than that and see everybody over the age of 65 getting vaccinated, but there is a broad range in the community as well. And a lot of it comes down to whether the individual and the population recognise how serious flu can be for them. That seems to be one of the drivers that gets people vaccinated, if they recognise that disease can be severe and that vaccinations an effective step that they can take to reduce their risk.
Mm. Are you concerned that there's been long-lasting damage done to the perception of vaccines on the back of COVID?
No, I'm not concerned about that. Australia has really always been a country, and we've had a population of people that, by and large, have been really supportive of vaccination. I think that the pandemic was an incredibly difficult time for everyone in terms of the impact that it had on us socially. It's really changed the way that we live our lives. You think about people having the ability to work more flexibly from home. A greater awareness of vaccines in the community in general. And I think that's a fantastic thing overall, to increase the knowledge of the general population around what vaccines are, how they work, why they're important. So I think that there've been some real positives that have come out of that as well.
Let's bring it back to the vaccine at hand then. So, I mean, I work in a corporate environment where my workplace puts on the free flu jab. I don't really have to think about it. They set the office up behind me and I turn around and I walk in. I go, can I get my flu jab now? But it's not that easy for everyone. Lots of people work on job sites or in, you know, the hospitality industry or whatever. How can a person who doesn't have access to a free flu jab in their workplace get one?
So I think one of the things that you bring up there is one of the most important factors in terms of getting people vaccinated, and it's increasing access to these vaccines. If the vaccines are available at your workplace, if they're available just around the corner from home, you're removing one of the barriers, because we know that overall Australians are supportive of vaccination, but it's finding a way to make access convenient and available for them on their terms. There's been some real improvements in that in recent years, and one of those has been through increasing access to vaccines in pharmacy. So this year, anybody can go to their local GP or to their pharmacist and access flu vaccines. And we're seeing that access increase in terms of the populations that pharmacists are able to vaccinate, and also the range of vaccines that they can give as well. So this has been, I think, a really great step in terms of improving access, which will hopefully lead to increased uptake as well.
Is it a same day situation when you go to your pharmacist? Is it you can kind of walk in and say, I'm ready, and they go, oh yeah, give us 10 minutes and you're good to go?
Yeah, absolutely. So a friend of mine actually earlier this week walked into the pharmacy and was able to be vaccinated on the spot, was there to do some other things and pick up some bits and pieces in the pharmacy. And yeah, the pharmacist said, look, we've got flu vaccines. Would you consider getting vaccinated today? And that opportunistic interaction with the pharmacist led to them being vaccinated. So yeah, absolutely.
Is that then a strategy of pharmacies? Is that going to form part of trying to get more people vaccinated, is actually proactively asking rather than the sign at the front of the pharmacies that says, yeah, flu jab's here, but actually the pharmacist saying, look, while I've got you, while you're picking up your script, would you like to roll up your sleeve for a jab?
Yeah, I think all pharmacies are going to approach in a slightly different way depending on what their model of service is. Some pharmacies will certainly have dedicated flu clinics and they may have specific days and times that they have availability for vaccination. But there are plenty of pharmacies that are looking at exactly that model. And what they're doing is picking up people that otherwise perhaps wouldn't be going to the GP to book in and make an appointment. So we're getting more people vaccinated that would otherwise perhaps not be.
All right, well, we'll have to keep an eye on the numbers this flu season, hopefully up a little bit from last year's. Dr. Julianne Baylis, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. Julianne Baylis, an immunologist and the Vaccines Medical Director at CSL Seqirus. Thanks for listening to today's briefing. That is all for this episode. Before you go, though, we would love it if you could share this ep with someone you think might enjoy it. And if you want to keep up with our other content, you can check us out on Instagram at The Briefing Podcast and on TikTok and YouTube. Search Listener Newsroom. I'm Sasha Barbagat. See you next time.
Listener.